know that some of the families just living around my house were eating fish 3 times a day. That was common years ago. It's not as common today in some of the other villages. But Karluk had a store before. They had a fuel supply, and they don't today. They have new housing. They had to relocate the village because of erosion. They're up the river. They've got to make house payments now, and of course oil payments. They don't have an electrical distribution system. So things are really tough, and they are dependent upon that river. And we've asked Interior to come in and assist us, because we have absolutely no control over the river. We joint selected, the village of Karluk joint selected with Larsen Bay, the entire river and the Karluk Lake. Today we have title to nothing. We placed our complete confidence in the regional corporation, and as a result of it, we have title to nothing. It's been all turned over to the region. The region made a commitment to give us back 1,860 acres of land for 100,000+ acres. Our land, our river is considered navigable. However, the region has title, I believe, to the surface lands under the river. So we've got quite a predicament. We'd like to try to get some kind of assistance. And like I said, we don't have the funds to do it. We've got approximately $39,000. We have the responsibilities as a result of a resolution passed by the IRA traditional council to assist in getting our lands turned over to the tribal council. And in the resolution, it also states that we're responsible for the 14C lands. And the way it sits right now, we just don't have the funds to do that.
That's a resolution passed by the IRA.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Could I ask you a couple of questions? You said that you had been active in a number of these corporations and regional and local and so on, going back even before ANCSA. One of the things that Congress intended was that these corporations would eventually start paying dividends and there would be a stream of income going to Native people from the corporations. The other thing they thought people would get out of it would be jobs. And just from your perspective, thinking back to what people's expectations were, what about jobs? Has ANCSA produced jobs in this region?
Very little. Very little.
And
three of the village corporations, Old Harbor, Larsen Bay, and Karluk, formed a subsidiary, Kodiak Island Seafoods, and purchased a cannery from Alaska Packers. You'll see it when you go to Larsen Bay. And within a matter of years, we lost it. It basically was a poor investment, but I don't think it still didn't produce that many jobs.
When you had it, or when you got it, the idea was not only to make money, but to provide jobs for shareholders.
That's right.
And it had been work. It had been. It was an operating cannery when you got it, I suppose. So it had some employees.
It had been over the years, yes. But they imported a lot of the employment and our employees from other areas. But that was one of the intents, is to create more employment for our people on the island.
And during the years that you ran it, were you able to provide any significant number of jobs for people? You're shaking your head.
That no. Means, no. I think years ago we were able to do it through things like the Economic Opportunity Act and so on and so forth, EDA. But as we got more involved with, you know, with our own subsidiaries and businesses, it seemed that employment decreased for Native people. Outside people came in, have taken over jobs, both the profit and non-profit. I think probably the profit has made some effort to, you know, hire local people more than the non-profit, but... Fishing is diminishing, and a lot of these guys are, you know, going to be losing boats and everything if we don't come up with something.
Okay, well, thanks very much. Mm-hmm. Yes, Mr. Brown.
Well, I'd like, just like to put 2 cents worth in here about the children that were born too late, as long as we're talking here. I happen to have 2 children who were born too late. One was just a couple of months, and what was really ironic is when the BIA put our native blood, my wife's and my native blood, into the computer, we were half. The children came out 5/8, which of course is half. And I think that was one of the worst parts of this Alaska Native lands claims. And I'm glad to see that the Hawaiians, through our, I don't know what you'd call it, stupidity, have decided not to put a cutoff date on their children, because your children are your most important resources you have anyway, as far as I'm concerned. And the ones in Hawaii, as long as you're a certain percentage, you could be born now or you could be born in the 21st century, if that could be possible, to still have enough blood in you, native blood in you. There isn't too much to talk about it because they're still trying to do it. I don't know if they're ever going to do it. I don't think they deserve to go back to 71 and get the money, which wasn't much, but it sure seems like they could start a program on the first of a fiscal year, going back to the children who were born too late. If nothing else, at least get some property, some land. That's about all I have to say. I could say a lot more, but I get a little bit carried away when it comes to that, especially since they are 5/8 natives.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, please.
Several things that were brought to my attention to the different ones. Pete Olson is my name. I was on the Cognac board for 6 years and a Fognac board for seven or eight. Well, I should start at the beginning. There's 2 problems within our people, big problems. Ignorance and mistrust. Now I'm talking about ignorance in the field of corporations. And don't get me wrong, I'm still one of them after being in there all that time. You start to get the general idea of a profit-making corporation. In that time you begin to realize how it runs. I think it was a very sad mistake for the federal government to force us into something like this. They said we'd have 20 years to build ourselves up. Well, when I first got on both boards, we were up to our neck in lawsuits with bird watchers and the land lovers and the animal lovers and the hunters, and God knows who. I remember when I first got on the Cognac board, one particular stupid, senseless part of a lawsuit, hunters were wanting to come on our land, and they wanted to go into the, they wanted to take both sides of a stream or a creek, and so then they said all navigable waters. And in that lawsuit, what were we going to constitute a navigable water? And they said it should be anywhere a log could float down a stream. And yet they never gave a definition of a log, which could be a stick a foot long or an inch round or these things we were fighting. All the time our shareholders were saying, look at all the money we're getting, where is it? Well, I'm sad to say that the lawyers, they were in there and they were not only getting the lion's share, but everyone else's too. The laws had made it so tough for us. In the land claims there, somewhere there, I'd seen it, but I couldn't tell you where it is now. The federal government said they were going to be lenient on us as corporations because we were in the learning stage. Then we got into a lawsuit. Then the state government says, hey, you're a corporation now. You will go right down to the letter of the law. We are supposed to have 20 years from the time we started, but when I was in, while I was on the FOGNAG board, it was 7 years before we got our first land. Now, in all those 7 years, Koniag and all the villages were busy fighting all the bureaucrats and everybody else that was jealous of what we got, which made it so hard for us. And going back to wanting to know what's going on in the corporation for a shareholder, I had been told some people had wanted me to run on the board, and I asked, well, why you want me to run? I said, I've only had an seventh grade education. They said, well, we believe you're honest and we trust you. Then when this lawsuit come along, many of them people had no use for me. They didn't trust me any longer. This is the thing that has, when I'm, I should have taken it in sequence now, ignorance, when I say ignorance, I know of an instance where a native down in the South End was asked, are you a member of shareholder in Koniag? And they said, well, I don't know, we haven't merged yet. They could not understand that they were as much Koniag as they were Village Corporation. They could not understand it. Well, why didn't we teach them? Number one, our job was try to start finding ways to make a profit for the corporation. That was what we were in there for. And another thing too, well, while a lot of the people had trust and faith in me, there's as many that didn't, simply because they might not like the way I comb my hair or whatever. But our people have a distrust that goes way back. When you look at what the white man had come in and done in the early years. Now, Mary there, she's older than I am, Eunice. Myself, I was 3 years old before I become an American citizen. I was 3 years old. By an act of Congress, the people that were born and raised on United States ground, they had the honor of making us American citizens. Going back now to being on the board, there were so many things that we had to keep quiet because the vultures were out there to grab what they could. I mean, a lot of these big business didn't like us coming in. They didn't like us getting the land claims. And we had to keep things absolutely quiet right in with the 9 board members. Not because we like to keep it quiet, but we had no choice. I think I can truthfully say, just from what I know in our background, if we never had this lawsuit, there's some things I don't want to reveal yet. Someday I could tell you why, but I'm hoping we can still restore Koniag. But I believe right now we would have been getting dividends today if it wasn't for that lawsuit. Now, when I speak of ignorance, the board members that are on there today on Koniag, when they came in and took over, they got rid of every single person that worked in there. Now, what kind of a corporation? This is ignorance, plain stupidity and ignorance. What kind of a company would go in there without finding trained, well-qualified people to take over the jobs? They canned everybody. Now, I don't know, I guess there's only about 2 or 3 working down there now. Gene can tell you, they begged him to come back for a while to get some of our land programs straightened up with land management. Here they had canned him. He was very essential and very valuable to the corporation. They needed him very bad, but what did they do? Because he was part of the old board, they got rid of him. Now what is left there is nothing, absolutely nothing. This is total ignorance, and some of them, I imagine, are college-educated men. How could... This is what we are faced with all of our people. And the reason they cannot trust their own people, the friction that's within our people so strong, is the very fact that it dates way back. The village where my wife was born and raised, I write in the land claims book, it tells how the native people went up to the stream to get some fish in during fishing season, and the white man, he had a rope strung across this creek, so they, when they vibrate, they kept the fish back, and they were scooping up everything. When they tried to get some fish, they were threatened that they would beat their skulls in. That's recorded in history. It's not just my say-so, and I could show you in a land claims book. And so our people are living in jealousy and living in fear. And I doubt if there's 5 qualified corporate men in all of the whole Native Claims Act. Yet we were forced to become corporations. We didn't have a choice. Now our land, a good example now, if you look at the history, not only in Alaska, but all the United States, the Indian people, as well as the Eskimo and Aleut Native people, the land was only valuable to them to earn a living, to go out and hunt. And if the land was poor for several years, they starved. Now they're giving us land, they says, well, after 20 years, you've got to make a profit out of it. They're demanding, they're forcing us by law to get away from the lifestyle. They're forcing it by law. That, why should that land, why should it be taxed? The people weren't getting it to cut it up in sections and selling. They wanted it to hunt with, as they did all through the years. I'm speaking primarily the village people. Those of us that live within the cities have changed strongly to the urban type of livelihood, yet we still like to go out and hunt. Now, going back, as I said, with far as the board not wanting shareholders in, we had some problems there. Some of our people would come in feeling good, and they misunderstood and misinterpreted. And what you have nothing but a wild argument in a corporate meeting. As it is, 90% of the people don't care to sit in there very long in these meetings. Like to get in and get out because they're very taxing physically and mentally because of not known. All the time, every meeting, we had to have a lawyer there to interpret the corporate workings of a corporation. Then one of the first things we tried to do when we first started was we all said our older people have nothing. They're not going to see anything. Why can't we give them some money? A Fognak tried very hard, and Cognac did. And the law says every shareholder has got to be given an equal share. You cannot give one shareholder more than the other. When we were going to give our people some land, our lawyer said, you better be very, very careful of that. Why? Because if I got a piece of land and it should be valued little more than my neighbors, there's a lawsuit. The corporation has given me more than given my neighbor. So then, what are you going to do? Everywhere we tried to turn, and we were people that never, we only knew what a corporation was by the word. That's all we knew, corporation. We heard of it, but we never knew or understood it. So getting back, we had to keep people out. While we didn't enforce it, we didn't encourage it. And then again, too, having to keep things quiet. When you want to share with your people, hey, look at now, this is something we, looks like it's going to come true. But no. We had to keep it quiet and keep ourselves all tense and tied up because who would understand? Then they jump us. Going back again to ignorance, one shareholder, when his parents died, he got shares from a different, from a Fognak corporation. Well, his name wasn't on there because it hadn't gone through legal procedures that was given over to him, so we couldn't put his name on there, and he got so hostile to all of us but that is mine. We said, yes, it's yours. We know it's yours. But the law says, well, then he would jump all over. Ignorance. And as I said a while ago, some of these people didn't even realize they're shareholders in Koniag. Well, I had made a statement one time about we should try teaching them, and our manager says, well, is that what we're here for? Look at how long it would take and how much it would cost. I'd venture to say 95% of the people that own stock in General Motors or Ford doesn't know how a corporation operates. And yet we are supposed to be forced to tell our people or teach our people these things, and we had 20 years to do it in. And as I said a while ago, simply because of a lawsuit, Koniag has nothing. Getting back to it was a simple thing that our people are ignorant and they're very distrustful, and that distrust has come a long ways when you look at the history of the United States, how our people, all of our people have been misused. I honestly believe that some people in Washington was trying to do a decent thing for us, but you got too many shysters out there that are out to grab or out to see that you don't get something. I had a little tiny article in from Alaska Magazine where a member of the Ku Klux Klan, he was up here. I still got that home. I wish I'd have brought it and showed it to you. And he was getting into a chapter of the advancement for white people simply because the native people were making too many advancements. I believe this was in a 1981 Alaska Magazine. These are things we've been faced with right from the beginning, and this is what it's cost us. It has turned us, personal friends has turned enemies because we chose sides, what we believed in. We become personal enemies. I had felt all my time in there was the purpose to try to do something for my children and grandchildren, because at my age I knew I wasn't going to, in the 20 years, see much of anything. But now I'm sad to say it don't look like my children are going to have nothing but embarrassment, and that's all, my grandchildren, simply because we cannot trust one another, the native people, and cannot accept what the board was trying to do for them. The board that I believe I can honestly say in my heart and standing before God that there was only one thing that I was guilty of, and that was trying to make a profit for our corporation. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Mr. Olson.
Did you want me to? You want some questions?
No, that I think you covered most of the ground. Thank you.
Mr. Commissioner, my name is Charlie Gayreok, and if you remember, I have given two testimonies prior to this testimony I'm going to give. And the testimonies I have given reflect my opinions and understanding of what the process has taken our native people. And as you remember, if you remember, my first testimony was based on ANSCA being, as I considered, an illegal act of Congress because it denied the federal rights of Native people, the rights of Native people under federal case laws and legislation that requires the consent of tribal members in case where land is going to be alienated from those tribal members. And my second speech was regarding my understanding of how legitimate the claims of Native people were. As you remember, as and most people don't know this, even a lot of the Native people, is that the original claim was a total of $375 million, and the Land Claims Act gave them 44 million acres, which meant that they lost 331 million acres of their original claim. Besides the 44 million acres, the Native people received slightly less than $1 billion. And if that is a compensation for the lands lost, dividing 331 million acres by 1 billion comes out to a little less than 33 cents an acre. I have read in the Kadiak Times of a lawyer named Barsh that he stated that the land compensation was equivalent to $3 an acre, but reviewing the documents that I have, the $3 an acre is a lot higher than what the actual figure showed, and the actual figure showed that the Native people are compensated only 33 cents an acre, or slightly less than 33 cents an acre. And during my second speech, what I was justifying was that the Native claims, that people, the claims of Native people were legitimate in our area. For example, the hunting and trapping fishing locations that I hunt and fish off now have been passed on to me by my father. And those same sites have been passed on by his father, those same sites were passed on by his my dad's grandfather. And those kind of claims have been passed on for centuries, which I think are lot more legitimate than just claiming 375 million acres. And tonight, I would like to talk about another opinion of mine that through studying and evaluating historical facts, that I have come to a conclusion that that ANSCA was by design. During the lawsuits that our region, I'm from the AVCP region, during the lawsuits that AVCP filed on Navarin Basin, lease area, in the documents, some of the documents that we found that we didn't know that we could acquire through federal law, that in cases where we needed to find and evaluate documents, that we had the authority and the right under federal law to get those documents. And in those documents, there was a word that kept popping up. And that word was Native problem. Our congressional, the Congress, the departments, and if I remember correctly, congressional representatives of ours kept referring to the Native problem. And this was way prior to 1971, and I think that was the time that Native problem started being used, was when the federal government recognized us as to have the rights through the federal Indian case laws and legislation that they identified it as a Native problem. And the Native problem, to me, as I evaluated, was that the people through the tribal governments had a legitimate claim to the land, that the federal government and the oil companies and big corporations were interested in. And the only reason that through the hearings that we have heard is that the only reason that the federal government supposedly settled the land through ANSCA was because of the oil fields up in Prudhoe Bay. But looking through that settlement, I don't think the appropriate term for Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act is an appropriate term to describe the land. To describe supposedly the settlement. In my opinion, it's not an Alaska Native Claims Settlement. It's an Alaska Federation of Natives settlement, because we're not involved, and we were not consulted. And from further listening to the testimonies of those that were involved with the negotiations, that the settlement was derived through threats of our Native representatives in Congress, and also the continuous providing of booze to those representatives that we have that were down there, because even at the testimony, that was what was stated by one of the, if I remember correctly, one of the ones that negotiated a settlement. But my point is that the testimony that giving a brief statement of what I have talked about before and why I made such statements, that my testimony is that ANSCA or the corporations will never succeed, because there's two things that were incorporated into ANSCA. One is that the land became part of the corporate asset, and this has put the land already in most cases in most regions has already jeopardized the land. In some cases they have already lost the land. It's just that it hasn't been the courts haven't directed the people who are right now filing claim to take away the lands from corporations who have lost the money to pay for the service. Some are lawyers, some are corporations, some are consultants. They have already filed such suits, but the only reason that we haven't seen that is because the courts haven't made the decision and told the landowners, the corporations, that they have to give away their land, that they have in fact lost their land. And from our region, in studying this land claims issue and the history of how the federal government has operated, it shows to me also that they also knew ahead of time that the corporations didn't work. They tried that with one Indian group, and it didn't take, from what I could read, it took less than 10 years for those Indians to lose all that land. And that is why I say it was by design, that the only way that I believe that we can salvage the land is by going through the tribal governments, because that is where the federal government saw a problem, is that as long as we recognized that as tribal governments, as long as we recognized to have rights under federal Indian case laws and legislation, that they had very little chance of succeeding in taking away our land. They know that most of us do not have the money to fight off the corporations. They know that we do not have the monies to fight the federal government. They also know that we do not have the funds to fight the state. And the reason I come to these conclusions is that because I think that ANSCA was by design. For example, if you remember in the newspapers about a native allotment case that a native person filed way prior to ANSCA, that as soon as ANSCA was passed, because in ANSCA there's a section in there that said that they have taken away our Aboriginal rights. As soon as ANSCA was passed, the state filed a counterclaim to this claim for a native allotment by a native person, saying, justifying their counterclaim, saying that there was historical evidence of a community there. And that person has a direct bloodline to that an old community. But the state claimed that they had better rights. And the only reason that they had stronger claims to me is because in land claims, it did say that we have lost our Aboriginal rights. And other cases where the federal government even used its own agencies and organizations. I believe one case that I can use is when a native person applied for a native allotment. The federal government, working with the state in trying to prevent that native person from getting that land, said that the reason that that land cannot be granted to that person and will not be granted to that person is because there was a federal installation in there, and the federal installation or realty department of that federal installation said that they haven't given up that land. And those are kind of things I think that native people should really start looking at, because to me, it's not. I don't think the problem is with ANSCA. I don't think the problem is with corporations. That I think it is a problem of ANSCA, where in the section where they abolish the Aboriginal rights of Native people, because I don't think that I think that they already knew and had planned on how to take away the people, take away the land from the people. They knew that corporations would limit the authority of the shareholders, that the authority would be granted to the board of directors. And as I look at the history of corporations, the prominent people, the people that had prominent control over the corporations were either lawyers or consultants. And because of our lack of understanding and experience in corporations, many of our leaders were misled by those individuals that they hired and paid a high price. And finally, the reason that I think corporations will never work is because in the corporations, it is designed so that only a few people will have the ultimate authority. And once you put that limited a number of people to have the authority and add the money, you will never have an honest group of people that will deal for you. Because history has shown us that money will do strange things to Native people. Not just to Native people, but to white people. And because of this money, that is what's splitting us up. That is why during the FN convention I proposed that the land be separated from the corporations and be given to the tribal governments. Because that is where the ultimate authority lies, and that's who the true landowners are. I think that if the Native people all organized and got together and fought for the land and not so much worry about the corporations, but fight for the land to get to retain it, that we might have a future. But as long as the corporations own it and control it, we won't have a chance, because that land claims has taken away the authority of Native tribal members over the land.
Thank you. Thank you.
For the record, my name is Nancy Anderson. I apologize for coming in late. I thought it started at 8 o'clock. I'll apologize soon because I'll be leaving early. I'd like to welcome you to Kodiak and the rest of your members here. And what I'll talk about right now is the land and the stock. 1991 is right around the corner. And what's going to happen to our stock when it becomes saleable? I heard two sides to the story. One group said, I'm going to sell all my stocks because it isn't worth anything anyway. And then I hear others saying, I'll never sell. Because this is a decision that you will have to be making. All I'm going to do is stress some of my own opinions, because I've been involved with the Native movement for 14 years. Is that better? We have to realize how valuable our Kodiak land is to us. And we need this land, if nothing else, but only for subsistence. We could lose our land in so many different ways. One, if we don't pay our taxes when they're due. Another, if you allow trespassing, you don't say or do anything about it. Pretty soon you lose your rights to that. And we could sell it. We'll have to start thinking about what to do when we lose our tax-exempt statuses. That's going to be a big problem right there. We need an economic base in which to work from. One thing for sure will happen on December 18, 1991. On that date, the Native corporations organized under ANCSHA will cancel all outstanding stock and issue new stock to shareholders. The new stock will be able to sell, will be able to pledge, use as collateral to get loans. And we may be offered large amounts of money. If the majority of it sells to non-natives, we will lose control of our corporation and probably our land. Things will be happening different ways. What will happen to our subsistence rights? Will our land be used to generate dollars to make a profit? And what kind of impact will it have on us Natives? Alaska Native Settlement Act, better known as ANCSHA, is complex, hard to understand, hard to analyze, and harder yet, very hard to solve the problems. In my opinion, it had to be written by a Philadelphia lawyer, because it's the only one that could understand it. ANCSHA has created hard feelings among our own people. there's a real wedge between all of us here in Kodiak. Some of our shareholders are disappointed because there has been no dividends. Others are frustrated because they lack the knowledge about corporate structure, corporate matters. And others are bitter. And there are many reasons for that, and God only knows. I went to the convention last month, the AFN convention. Their theme is unity. And right now, I can't see us natives having unity statewide. The reason is very simple. We don't even have it in our own region. It doesn't make any difference who we have for a coach. We can't score unless we have teamwork. And that's one of the things that we're lacking right here in our own community. If all regions could unify, I feel that anything would be possible. If we continue fighting, we are going to destroy ourselves. And we will have no one else to blame but ourselves. That is all the comments I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Sanderson. Thank you. Well, would anybody else like to speak? We can bring that microphone around if any folks would like to. Well, we'll just see if anybody else would like to.
My name is Tom Gallagher, and I've been in this country here for the last, about 56 years, which I think it's a long time. I'm from California. I married a native girl here and have three children, and something like, 11 grandchildren. That's no laughing matter. Well, I'm glad about it. Anyway, I'm here to kind of represent my wife and my children because they're all natives. And this is a matter of grace and lease in this country. I come up here as a 17-year-old boy. And I signed up for a cowboy job, mind you. I thought they'll have horses and cattle out here. They did have cattle. I come up with the Alaska Packers. And I wasn't qualified at all because I didn't know anything about milking cows. But I stuck to it. And I made my home all those years, except for a few years that I went outside. Was my family. Now the whole thing that I'm talking about, I have a son that's a lawyer, I have a daughter that's a teacher, and the youngest one here, she's strong for the natives. So what I'm talking about is I had some problems like near island. Since 1943, 44, 45, I had cattle, I had goats, I had horses, and I've still got cattle in Near Island. And at one time I tried to get a grace and lease. Oh, I think it's back in 1947 or 48. Anyway, it was something like over 30 some odd years ago. And I never did get this grace and lease. In fact, they made a mistake. They claimed they gave it to somebody else, which is true. Well, that didn't go so good with me. So they compromised. He says, we'll give you an island out here. It's right by Bone Harbor, which composed about 18 acres. That wasn't so good either. But I stuck to it. And the reason for that, I was in the restaurant business here, which I had to maintain that, and I had to have cattle, because we actually run into a lot of problems out here during the strike, during the war. And so it's been a problem right along. I don't know why, but I'm still digging into it. I'm not through yet. Now, they gave me this three little islands out here, which is composed of about 18 acres. For some reason, right now they think that first the borough wants to take it away from me, and then the city, they claim that they have it. I don't think they have, because I still got the grace and lease. And Near Island, I still got a lot of cattle out there, a lot of ponies. And some of these people here will verify that. But I'm also trying to protect my wife, the water rights that they have out here. I think Mr. Fields remembers this. I don't know how many years, but this is around 1968 that we got these water rights. The city manager out here tells me, not this one here, but the one before this one, or two or three of them, claims that I trespassing in Near Island. And yet I was the only one that had the cattle out there all those years. Nobody else claimed the island. I still got the cattle. They might throw me in jail, forgive them, they told me to move it out of there. But I haven't done it yet. I just feel like as an American citizen, I have just as much right. And I'm also trying to protect my wife's water rights. Here's in Anchorage, they say somebody made a mistake there. Boy, I sure like to hand that to the governor. Making those mistakes, there's so many mistakes that they made. And now, so I got Long Island. Long Island, my wife bought some cattle from a man here way back in... Ernie Bryan. Well, getting too old, remember. Anyway, he sold it to us, sold it to the wife, and so he was going to take possession. The wife, she was transferred, and she says, well, how many heads you got? He says, I'll buy it, and she paid him. We made that trip over to Long Island, and the army says, you can't step on this island here. This is restricted. And so here we go again. Another problem. But I still stuck to it. Just like I done out here, I stuck to my family. I brought my families, and I'm still trying to protect them. She has a lodgman over in Long Island. That's been, quite a few years, 72, I guess, when she filed claim for that, and that's 160 acres. Now, if there's any way, just like I said, it isn't myself, but I says, I'm still thinking about the native people here just the same, and I got a lot of friends, too, from outside, and they know how I feel about it. Well, I think I'm just taking too much of your time, so I say thank you. Well,
thank you, Mr. Gallagher. Thank you. Let me give it a whirl for a while. Take over for Tommy here. My name is Gene Sundberg. I'm a director for the Afognak Native Corporation, have been since 1976. Former land manager for Koniag, presently with the school district. And I just sort of like to, I think it's getting late, probably sum up my feeling about where Koniag has been, how it got there, and what happened at what I look at as a peak, and what's happening to it now, and where I hope it'll go in the future. In the beginning, as they say, Koniag did much of the work for the village corporations in the selection process, the enrollment, the beginning of the corporate structures, trying to tell or assisting in telling the village corporations how to be corporations. You've all heard, or a lot of you have testified, that we natives, we aren't corporate people. I think we all knew that then. We know it to some degree now. We're getting smarter, but we weren't very smart back then. So we needed help. Koniag and some of its consultants assisted and finally got corporate structures built in all the villages. Once that was done, Koniag began to look at itself and wondered where it was going. Well, it being a corporation for profit, realized that it had to make some investments or do something with its money, and therefore invested. The board was conservative, and they, thinking that it was right to invest in the local market, did so, but didn't make me or you any money or much money. So the conservative way didn't work. The board, I think, saw that and decided that there was a change of direction that had to be made. And so they made it. They hired a professional manager, a professional chief to lead them in hopefully a new direction, that new direction being somewhat risky, but a chance for the corporation to make it, make a profit, a little quicker than they had in the past. At the same time that there was a new manager, the board also worked in two other directions. Merger of all the villages in the region and work on the D2 bill. I think too many people don't understand exactly what that D2 bill did for the region. It solved a lot of problems that we had. I think you all remember the explosive nature of the Bell's Flats issue, the Yuzinki Borough watershed controversy. There were others. Certainly, one of the biggest items that Koniag was looking at in negotiating that D2 bill was being able to add to its profit by getting for the villages the remaining lands on a Fog Neck Island for the timber. And after 4 years of negotiating with the federal government, the state governments, the borough, the city, passed through the House and the Senate a bill which did transfer lands that we owned on the mainland for the remaining lands on a Fog Neck Island. It also took care of our oil and gas rights on the peninsula as long as we had subsurface rights on the mainland. It also provided for, and this is a price we had to pay at the time, a price to the environmentalists for a portion of a Fog Neck Island. State made selections. The Burrow-Yuzinki controversy was solved. Seven villages that were uncertified became certified as ANCSA village corporations. They lost their land entitlement because had they not taken certification the way that it was done, they would not have even been village corporations under ANCSA. So it did solve a lot. And with all these things happening, Koniag seemed to be peaking. We had a new manager. We had a merger in ongoing to where we were going to put all our assets together, use them for the benefit of all 3,343 stockholders, and put the Fog Neck joint venture together in hopes that through all these efforts and changing our objectives, our goals and objectives, to timber, fisheries, and oil and gas, hopefully. Oil and gas was the risk. We did have some investments up in the Beaufort Sea. We did have a well being drilled on the Alaska Peninsula. So the hope was that if everything gelled, Koniag could have been the finest regional corporation in all of Alaska. But in 1980, end of 1980, we had a lawsuit that struck us down. And I say us because I was part of Koniag at that time. And as a result, a year or so later, a whole board was removed. As a result of a new board coming in, they swept, the new broom swept clean, and all the employees lost their jobs. The dream that Koniag had for all of us went down the tube. We lost it. New board didn't carry on with the ideas of the old board naturally. And so the peak that I saw being built up has swung the other way. Now, who's to blame? Do we blame ANCSA for that? I don't see that ANCSA is to blame. We seem to be our own worst enemies. We were in this case. We couldn't agree on where that peak should have taken us, so we, like I say, went down the tube. I still think I believe in the corporate structure. There are some that don't. It just needs working at it. It needs understanding. It needs somebody that knows how to work a corporation to lead us to the bigger and better things that I think this corporation deserves, because ANCSA allowed it. We just have to be smarter than the congressmen and the senators that put the thing together, thinking that we would self-destruct. I think we've all heard that before, that ANCSA was a instrument that we would use to self-destruct, and the federal government would eventually get back the land that they gave us on one hand. And my friend Pete Olson has told me the story many times about the government giving us land on the one hand and taking it away in the other. And that's exactly what they're doing. We're losing it not only by way of the act, but they're using the act and the D2 bill, the subsidiary of the ANCSA, to use it in ways to get back that land. And there's examples of it that are ongoing every day. One of my last duties at CONIAG was to protest the federal government from taking away what they refer to as 3E, or public lands that were necessary for the government to continue functioning. Well, if they wanted 5 acres, I could see that. If they wanted 6 or 7, I could see that. But when they wanted vast land areas, 65, 75 acres to hold one little navigational aid, I thought that was going a little too far. The other thing that they provided in the D2 bill was that, as far as CONIAG was concerned, if we did give up those 3E lands, or if we did try to apply for the shortfall that we admittedly took in this exchange for a Fog Neck Island, we were disallowed that by a Section N of Section 1427 of ANILCA, or the D2 bill. So, you know, even though we took care of a lot, I think CONIAG has lost a lot as a result of ANCSA or ANILCA by what Marvin Frost referred to as there's too many technicalities in the act. And those technicalities are what are beating us. They're taking away what they gave us on the one hand, and that's a crime. We ought to stand up. We ought to get our legislators to stand up for us and let them know that we're dissatisfied with ANCSA, and we ought to have some proposals to make it right again. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sundberg. Well, would anybody else like to speak this evening?
Can I say just a little word?
Sure.
Since I've been around here quite a while, involved in lands, in 1956, up till then, you could homestead anywhere around Kodiak Island, back a mile from the beach. 1956, there was a public hearing held in Kodiak. There were two men who attended. Their names were Joe Zettner and Carl Brumstead. They were both, Joe Zettner was a rancher, Carl Brumstead was interested in sheep. And there were only two people that showed up to protest against this action. There was a line drawn from Kaluta Bay to Vicota Bay. Everything this side was set aside for ranching. Everything on the other side was for the bear hatchery. Well, it remained that way until the Lake Terror Dam project came into being, and the Vicota and Shearwater Peninsula are area was sacrificed out of the ranching area to appease the Isaac Walton League, the Sierra Club, and all the other conservationists. To make a long story short, unless something is done drastically by year 1991 to make it possible for the people to retain the land, once the land is lost, I think it'll go back into the bear hatchery. They call it a bear refuge, but it's a bear hatchery. It's only a refuge for those who profit off of it. And I think that's about all I have to say.
Thanks, sir, Mr. Fields.
Turn them the
other way. We'll just turn them the other way. Well, Judge Berger, on behalf of our Native peoples of Kodiak, I'd like to tell you I've been working so hard because I knew you were coming. I can't get this open. I've just been working so hard, but we want to present you.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Beautiful.
Didn't I do nice work?
Well, gee, that's marvelous. It's funny they got the wrong person's name on here, but well, thank you very much, and thank you all. This is really very, very nice, and I sure do thank you all. It's just beautiful, and thanks all of you who spoke tonight. It's been a good meeting, and I learned a lot, and what each person says helps me to put the whole picture together, and this is certainly a lovely way to end the evening, I must say. So thanks very much. Well, I think we'll adjourn the meeting then and reconvene at Larson Bay tomorrow night. Thank you all again. Well, that's just gorgeous.
Possible to get a copy anyway. I, as you are doing, I'm learning a lot about what's going on here.
Sorry,
I'm an attorney. I work for Larson.
A copy of what?
What the transcript that is all.
Oh, sure, but just well, you can have both.
Okay.
For the transcript of what was said tonight, you might.